Edward Rushton was the radical, campaigning, blind poet of Liverpool. His life spanned the 18th and 19th centuries at the time of the slave trade, of revolution, and of social upheaval. Forgotten Hero, written by Bill Hunter and narrated by George Sefton, is his story.
Chapter 4. Money from Blood. Rushton denounced the merchants who made their wealth out of the terrible trade and exploitation. In a poem about a robin he could hear singing while he sat by the Liverpool docks, he wrote,
"Poor bird, 'tis strange that thou shouldst roam so far from thy sequestered home, shouldst leave the pure, the silent shade for all this filth, this crash of trade. Sweet are thy notes, yet mine's intent on life's prime object, cent per cent. Heed not thy soft, delicious strain, nor any notes, save notes of gain. Sweet are thy notes, and yet I fear thou hast a dull and tasteless ear. Else, why forsake the lonely glen for this deafening din of men? The rattling cart, the driver's bawl, the mallet's stroke, the hawker's call, the child's shrill scream, the windlass song, as slow the vessel moves along. All these, commixed with many a harsh sound more, rise to thy bleak abode in one discordant roar. Oh, Ruddock, couldst thou name some shore by British trade uncursed before, where Afric's injured race would come in crowds for half the present sum? Or couldst thou aid the speculating throng, the great commercial few would praise thy song."
Interesting narrative of the life of Olaudah Equiano, or Gustavus Vassa, written by himself, is one of the few accounts of enslavement by one of the victims. Peter Fryer writes of Equiano's book that it was the most important single literary contribution to the campaign for abolition. For the first time, the case for abolition, presented by a black writer in popular form, reached a wide reading public. In its author's lifetime, the interesting narrative went through 8 British editions. 6 more followed in the 22 years after his death. But even before this well-aimed blow at the plantocracy, Equiano had won widespread recognition as principal spokesman of Britain's black community. It was Equiano who in 1783 had called the leading campaigner for the abolition of the slave trade, Granville Sharp's, attention to the mass murder of 132 black slaves thrown alive into the sea from the decks of the Liverpool slaver Zong. From then on, the two men kept in close touch and undoubtedly coordinated their plans. Equiano was born in Biafra in 1745. He was 10 years old when he was captured with his sister when they were alone in the house. They were seized by 2 men and a woman who stopped our mouths and ran off with us into the nearest wood. They were taken, sometimes by land and sometimes by water, to the sea coast, where they arrived 6 or 7 months after they were kidnapped. He describes his terror on being put aboard the slave ship, when he saw a multitude of black people of every description chained together, every one of their countenances expressing dejection and sorrow. "I no longer doubted of my fate, and quite overpowered with horror and anguish, I fell motionless on the deck and fainted." He and other Africans were whipped for not eating.
"White people looked and acted, as I thought, in so savage a manner, for I had never seen among my people such instances of brutal cruelty, and this not only shown towards us blacks, but also to some of the whites themselves. One white man in particular I saw when we were permitted to be on deck, flogged so unmercifully with a large rope near the foremast that he died in consequences of it, and they tossed him over the side as they would have done a brute.
Equiano described the stench of the hold as so intolerable and loathsome that it was dangerous to remain there for any time, and some were permitted to stay on the deck for fresh air. But when the whole ship's cargo was loaded, they were confined together in the absolutely pestilential hold.
The closeness of the place and the heat of the climate added to the number in the ship, which was so crowded that each had scarcely room to turn himself, almost suffocated us. This produced copious perspirations, so that the air soon became unfit for respiration from a variety of loathsome smells, and brought on a sickness amongst the slaves, of which many died, thus falling victims to the improvident avarice, as I may call it, of their purchases. This wretched situation was again aggravated by the galling of the chains, now become insupportable, and the filth of the necessary tubs, into which the children fell and were often suffocated. The shrieks of the women and the groans of the dying rendered the whole scene of horror almost inconceivable. Happily, perhaps, for myself, I was soon reduced so low here that it was thought necessary to keep me always on deck, and from my extreme youth I was not put in fetters. In this situation, I expected every hour to share the fate of my companions, some of whom were almost daily brought upon deck at the point of death, which I began to hope would soon put an end to my miseries.
Death rates vary greatly from ship to ship, but it is estimated that, on average, 2 out of every 10 Africans died in the ships during the voyage to enslavement in America. Other ships in the Atlantic kept to windward of the slave vessels because of their stench. Generally, during a large part of their voyage, sharks would follow them. Geoffrey C. Stewart, in his book 1001 Things Everyone Should Know About African-American History, says,
"Captains use one of two methods for housing the Africans, known as loose packing or tight packing. Those who preferred loose packing believed that by allowing slaves greater room, air, and sanitary conditions, more would survive the voyage and bring greater profit. The theory behind tight packing was that by squeezing more people in the ship, the greater number would offset the increased death rate."
James Pope Hennessy gives a harrowing picture of degradation on the slave ships, the slave ports, and the plantations. He quotes the journal of Captain Thomas Phillips, who relates how he refused the urging of his officers to maintain discipline by cutting off the legs and arms of the most willful of the slaves to terrify the rest. The treatment of women slaves was unspeakable. John Newton writes in his journal that, while not necessarily universal in slave ships, the forced use of Negro girls by the officers and men on board ship was too commonly, and I'm afraid too generally, prevalent. Pope Hennessy comments that while many authorities say that the debauching of Negro women on board was not a universal desirable practice, it would not be logical to assume that there were many exceptions. During the Middle Passage, the greatest killer of Africans was disease. Scurvy, dysentery, smallpox, and other diseases spread rapidly throughout the cramped quarters, and not just the slaves were infected. The French slave ship, La Rodeur, was infected by ophthalmia in 1819, causing the slaves and the entire crew to become blind. Most eventually recovered, but the 39 Africans who did not were thrown overboard to avoid reinfesting the rest. Merchants or shipowners would seek insurance payments for lost cargo. There was the notorious Zong insurance case in 1783. In September 1781, the Zong had sailed from Africa with 442 slaves on board. Granville Sharp reported that between the time of her leaving the coast of Africa and the end of November, 60 slaves and 7 white people had died.
"These circumstances of sickness and mortality are necessary to be remarked, and also the consequences of them, viz.,
that the dead and dying slaves would have been a dead loss to the owners, and in some proportion a loss also to the persons employed by the owners, unless some pretence or expedient had been found to throw the loss upon the insurers, as in the case of Jetsam or Jerson, i.e. a plea of necessity to cast overboard some of the cargo to save the rest.
The master of the ship, Luke Collingwood, called together a few of the officers and told them that if the slaves died a natural death, it would be a loss to the owners of the ship, and Collingwood himself would have had to bear a share of it, comments Fryer. But if they were thrown alive into the sea, on the pretext that the ship's safety demanded it, then the loss would be the underwriters. The slaves were thrown overboard in three batches, on the order of the master, who personally picked them out. The claim was that there was no water. The chief mate made a deposition that the last 42 were thrown overboard before the stock of water was consumed, and before the fall of plentiful rain. It was an anonymous letter in the Morning Chronicle from someone who attended the hearing of the insurance claim, which alerted Oladar Equiano to the case. Granville Sharp lost no time in launching a vigorous campaign to bring the murderers to justice. The court ordered the underwriters to pay £30 for each murdered slave, but the underwriters refused to honour the claim. The owners of the ship were the bankers and slave traders William Gregson and partners. They asked the Court of King's Bench for a new trial. The Solicitor General represented the owners, and he demanded, "What is all this vast declamation of human people being thrown overboard? The question, after all, is, was it voluntary or an act of necessity? This is a case of chattels or goods." Fryer writes that Granville Sharp afterwards described the Solicitor General as the learned advocate of Liverpool iniquity, and says that the court granted a new trial, but if one did take place, there is no record of it, and we do not know whether Gregson's firm got its money. At this time, there was mounting black resistance to slavery, and increasing support for the movement to abolish the slave trade. The case of the slaver Zong shocked public opinion more deeply than any other single incident of its kind throughout the 18th century. Liverpool merchants were the vanguard of the opposition to abolition. A delegation, maintained at Liverpool Corporation's expense, remained in London throughout the parliamentary investigations and the discussions on the slave trade. It was there for the last two decades of the 18th century, up to the abolition of the slave trade in 1806. The Liverpool merchants even tried to hypocritically use the hardships of seamen to justify their opposition to abolition. Matthew Gregson, one of the slave traders:
"What are poor sailors but slaves, without even a Sunday to themselves on board a man of war, and many of them taken by force from enraged or tender mother, or loving wife and children? He is then kept in a state of perpetual imprisonment. If he has a wife, she cannot see him on board, if she is a woman of delicacy and feeling. In port on board a king's ship is often a scene of vile lewdness.